started singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free.
You are listening to CFRO 102.7 on your FM dial. Welcome to Animal Voices. My name is Marge Adams, and in the studio with me, our co-host, Carl Loskin. Sorry, a bit of a mix-up here. You are listening to CFRO 102.7 on your FM dial, and welcome to Animal Voices radio show. My name is Marge Adams, and in the studio with me, our co-host, Carl Loskin, and we're very pleased to have, as a brand new co-host, Kelly Harris. Welcome, Kelly. Pleased to have you in the studio today.
Thank you.
Also in the studio is our technician, John Pranger.
God damn it.
We have two guests lined up for the coming hour. And at the top of the hour, Lise Brown of the British Columbia Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals will be discussing the giving of animals as gifts at Christmas. And to that topic, she will talk about hazards found in homes at Christmas time that could be damaging or even fatal to family pets. Later in the hour, Carl Loskin will be speaking with Liz Mitten, who is an author, and she is going to be talking about something that Carl is going to explain to us.
Yes, she's written a wonderful book about horses, and it's called One with the Herd, A Spiritual Journey.
Mm-hmm. Sounds interesting. Kelly is going to be talking to us near the end of the show, and her topic is puppy mills, so it sounds like an interesting hour. Now, we have to wait for our call-in from Liz Brown, which should happen any moment. Have you got a comment or two, Carl?
Yes. What a surprise. Well, okay. Well, you know, it's a lot of interesting stuff happening with the increase in the grain prices, pork cattle industries, the pork and the cattle industries, they're facing the higher grain costs. I believe that the grain costs have increased by over 100%, they're feeling the pinch. So it's going to be passed on, and we're also looking at gigantic subsidies from the governments, federal, provincial, to support these cruel industries. And when the reality sets in and the price of the pork and the beef is realistically priced, which will be much higher, people will probably be consuming much less of those products. Well, you know, one other item that I have here is a great event that the Work Less Party is putting on for the next 3 days on Granville Island, worklessparty.org. You can go and have a look at. They're putting on a play called The Church of Pointless Consumerism. So that's happening in the evenings of tonight and Saturday and Sunday. And it'll be really, tickets are $15 to $20 on a sliding scale. So that's on Granville Island. Have a look at worklessparty.org. See if you can get a ticket, and you'll be informed about the Church of Pointless Consumerism. Mm-hmm. And our friend Conrad Schmidt, he's been on the show many times, and he's spoken about how if we eat lower on the food chain, we're also helping the environment so much. And he says, if we also work less, we involve ourselves more with the arts and subjects of real value, reading, going to plays like this one, that we become less consumer orientated, and instead of going shopping and buying more stuff, we return to real values. That's the worklessparty.org. I think they have it right.
Yes, I do too. I was very, very impressed with what Conrad had to tell us when he was last here. Now we have our guest on the line, and her name is Lise Brown, and she is the fundraising coordinator for the BCSPCA. Welcome to Animal Voices, Lise.
Thank you so much.
We're very interested to hear what you have to say about gift giving of pets at Christmas time. Do pets make good gifts?
And short answer, the answer is no.
That's short enough. Maybe you could tell us why the answer is no.
Sure. Well, you know, every Christmas it is so tempting to get the perfect Christmas gift. And as adorable as the idea of having a puppy or something under the tree might be, a lot of times what people don't factor in is that a pet is for life. So there's numerous considerations that need to be factored in before deciding to add a furry friend to your life. You know, something that may be really cute and fun on Christmas Day may not be so cute a year down the road or 12 years later if you haven't fully thought out your decision and the impact that a pet's going to have on your life.
Yes, indeed. And pets live long, don't they? So that it's not like something like a necklace or something you just put on and wear when you choose and leave it in the box for ages.
Exactly.
You've got to be with that pet daily.
And
there's a lot more to think of than just the companion aspect, because pets require a lot of care and a lot of money involved, too. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many decisions that have to be made. My first family dog, for example, he lived to be 19.
Oh,
so,
wow. Yeah,
you know, that's unusual for a dog, but if you think about a 20-year commitment, just randomly giving somebody that gift on Christmas Day, they may not appreciate it 10 years down the road when, it's their responsibility. And yes, there's so many factors that have to be taken into consideration.
Yes, I know. Remember one day, just after Christmas, doing my shopping, and the cashier said, "Do you know what someone gave me for Christmas? A puppy."
Oh.
She said, "I can't look after a puppy. I'm working all day, and
exactly.
I didn't want an animal," and so on and so forth. So
yes.
It doesn't really matter. You may have a person who's very fond of animals,
yes.
but doesn't just have the time, the energy, and all the rest that it takes
exactly.
to look after that lovely little creature.
Exactly.
No, yeah. Now, if, in fact, there is someone on your list that maybe you want to give a gift of a companion animal, and you know that person would like one, mm-hmm. tell us all the considerations, will you, that you must make to make sure that you're not going to be making a big mistake.
Well, you know, there are just so many things to consider. When I got my dog from a rescue group back in Calgary, actually, I was at the perfect stage in my life. I owned a home. It had a great backyard. You know, with my partner at the time, I thought we'd be able to work out the timing well, but then life changes, and I moved to Vancouver, and I'm now in a rental position.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, so that's something that a lot of people don't consider is mm-hmm. where you live, because if you're renting, especially in Vancouver, it's really, really hard to find places that are going to accept your animals.
I'm sure.
And, you know, I know that from experience.
So did you manage to get around it, or did you have to find another home for your animal?
No, I was lucky. I found a fantastic landlord, and, you know, there are people out there who are willing to accept pets, but, you know, it's my opinion that has to be something that has to be taken into consideration. If you're 20 years old and you know you're going to be renting for the next 10 years, then every time you move, it's going to be a really big deal
right.
to try to find a new home. So,
sure. And the other thing, too, if you go on way on vacation, you can't always take your companion animal,
exactly.
so you have to have a caregiver, don't you?
Exactly. So, again, you know, you have to find somebody that you trust, whether it's a boarding facility or friends or family, but
uh-huh.
a lot of times there will be costs associated with that as well.
Sure.
Boarding facilities can be quite expensive. Your friends and family may not... They may do it to help you, but may not appreciate the question, so...
Right. The other thing is the veterinary care, isn't it?
Veterinary care is incredibly expensive, and you know, right from the word go, again, a puppy or a kitten, for example, is such a cute, cute pet.
Yes.
And such a cute thing, but, you know, 8 weeks in when you have to spay or neuter it and its first cost to you are going to be about $100, well, you know, right away that's limiting for some people. And then you have to follow up with yearly vaccinations. And, mm-hmm. I mean, the big question is, what if they get sick? You know,
yes.
They're not covered under universal health care like we are.
No.
And,
that's
you know, animals,
true.
Once they get sick, they can cost a fortune. So yeah. You have to really, really think about all of those types of things.
And another thing that pops into my mind is the giving a pet to a child. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you would discuss it with the family, the mother and father, because it's usually the mother who ends up paying for the animal.
Yes.
But children have remarkably short attention spans, don't they? And mm-hmm. what they want today and pay a lot of attention to, maybe mm-hmm. a week from today, they've drifted onto something else, and they're not really interested in their dog or cat, whatever it happens to be.
Exactly. So, again, that has to be a decision made by a family. You know, I would hope in this day and age that no one would give a child a pet without discussing with the parents, because hopefully mm-hmm. the parents understand that they're going to be the primary caregivers of that animal, because, mm-hmm. you know, like you said, they're kind of a novelty item for kids, and that's yeah. the last thing anyone wants for an animal, is for it to just be a novelty.
Sure. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. But we actually, you know, at most of our shelters, we do have fostering programs.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And so that's something that someone could always look into, is if your child or, you know, your friend's child is really keen on adopting an animal, mm-hmm. even if it's a small animal like a gerbil or a hamster or something, try to foster one for a few days. Because,
yeah.
you know,
sure.
maybe the idea of a hamster sounds great, and then you get it at home and you realize that it's not the pet for you. So.
Well, yes, and the other thing, people often have one hamster or mm-hmm. one gerbil, one this, one that, and they are very sociable creatures, aren't they?
They are, and, you know, it's interesting because they are such social animals, and especially dogs, but mm-hmm. hamsters and gerbils, exactly
yeah,
the
sure.
same type of thing. But you have to be really careful with how you socialize them as well, so... It's not like you can just pick up a second hamster and put it in the same cage because,
uh-huh.
you know, sometimes animals of the same sex have dominance issues and they may fight. If you put a male and female together, then obviously you're going to have baby hamsters, and a lot of them fairly shortly. And
yeah.
so there's so many
and
things
frequently.
To consider. Exactly, and frequently.
Yeah, sure.
Exactly.
Even rats. Now, some time ago we had a lady on who had studied lab animals, mm-hmm. and she was stressing that rats like companions,
mm-hmm.
and we often don't think about that, even do we? When people have a rat, they take it out of the cage occasionally, and mm-hmm. put it on their shoulder or something. But it needs a companion of its own kind. I think, and she seemed to go along with that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And mice, same thing.
Mm-hmm. Marge, yeah. can I ask a question?
Yes, yeah, certainly.
I'm just hearing about the conversation about puppies, and it's just made me think that there's so much emphasis on giving puppies, and the truth is that puppies are so much work for the first 2 years, aren't they?
They're unbelievable.
Yeah, and I'm in my 30s, and I just adopted my first dog, mm-hmm. and two of my brothers have dogs, and they adopted dogs from the SPCA that were over 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a seamless transition. You know, there was no crazy, frantic puppy stage. There was no toilet training.
Mm-hmm.
These dogs, you know, are older. They sleep most of the day. They fit into the lifestyle. So I adopted a 4-year-old dog, and I am a big fan of adopting older dogs. So I know that that's a big thing for the SPCA, too, because you have a lot of older dogs.
It is, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I was just down at the shelter this morning, and we do have a lot of puppies there right now, and they're adorable, but... There's so much work. I mean, you won't sleep through the night.
They're like
a newborn child.
Yeah. I've experienced that.
And
yeah.
for first time owners, as I was, I mean, there's enough to learn with a dog. It's so much easier
absolutely.
Having a grown dog.
Yeah, no, and that's a great point. And especially our senior dogs, they're absolutely heartbreaking because they're at our shelter for
yeah.
so much longer because people just like the idea of a puppy. But the senior dogs, most of them are trained. You don't have to go through potty training. They
mm-hmm.
know how to spend time alone.
Yeah.
And, you know, sadly, a lot of those ones, the seniors that we get at our shelters have been surrendered by their family because the family didn't have enough time for them. So,
mm.
you know,
yeah.
they're a bit more heartbreaking to me because they have been loved
uh-huh.
and then they've been abandoned.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that's tough to take. So absolutely, senior dogs are always looking for love.
So another question I want to put to you, Lise, is... Mm-hmm. If everything is perfect for giving this pet, you've got
okay.
it's a senior dog and it's housebroken and it's friendly and all that sort of things.
Yep.
When should you present that dog or cat or whatever, the gift. Should you present it on Christmas Day?
Well, there's actually, I have kind of two responses to that question, and one is that I guess the best recommendation I would have is make your own gift certificate. And by that I mean, you know, if somebody in your family truly wants a pet, then make a gift certificate because it has to be their choice. You may think, like, a perfect dog for me may not be the perfect dog for you.
Right.
So, I mean, giving somebody the pet, unless they've chosen it themselves specifically and have met with that animal and understand its behavior, is a bad idea. But especially at Christmas, giving the gift of an animal is an even worse idea just based on all the chaos of the season. I mean, I don't know very many humans who make it through the holiday season, you know, in a great mood and happy because it is so stressful with all of the dinner parties and baking and planning and family. And so if you try to impose that on a brand new addition to your family, you can only imagine what that poor thing is going to go through.
Terrible. Yes, absolutely. Now, I know that the BCSPCA has an alternative giving campaign going on, and you're closely involved with that. So we'd like to hear about it, please.
Great, thank you. It's a new program that we've started this year. It's our Positive Gift site, and Positive Gift is spelled P-A-W, of course, because it's for the animals. And it's an alternative gift-giving site. So instead of giving an animal for Christmas, that type of thing, you can give the perfect gifts to any animal lovers on your list. And by that, the gifts that are on the site are actually donations, but they have the dual purpose of, or they serve the dual purpose, I should say, of educating people who are making the donations and also the gift recipients. It lets people understand the true costs of animal care. You know, so one of the examples is dog stay for a day, and that's $15. So by purchasing that gift, which is really a donation, it lets people understand that, you know, we've got, unfortunately, thousands of animals in our care at any time, and it lets people know the cost of that gift. But also, it's a feel-good gift because you know that you're helping an animal in need with that gift.
Absolutely.
The gift recipient can feel good about the fact that, you know, instead of getting something that they don't need, like a new shirt or a tie or something, that they've actually helped an animal in need as well.
Yes, yeah. That's a good idea.
Can I ask a question, March?
Sure.
I just wanted to ask about something that I'm going to be talking about later, about the dangers of buying from puppy stores, pet stores,
right?
Because a lot of the dogs come from puppy mills and that kind of thing,
right.
And I know that the very best thing is definitely to go to a shelter.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that just with your expertise, since I'm new to it?
I can, sure. And my short answer is this, and I don't mean for it to be a controversial answer by any means, but if you're thinking about ever buying an animal from a pet store, don't. I really can't stress that enough. When it comes to breeders, because there are reputable breeders out there, and a reputable breeder would never, ever give their animals to a pet store because it should be an informed decision. And basically, a good breeder should choose you. So it will determine it. Sorry, that's not fair. He or she will determine whether or not you're a good match for their dog. The interview process for you should be substantial. Again, you should feel special and honored that a breeder has chosen you to receive one of their puppies. At a pet store, I'm not sure what the statistics are, and I'd hate to even wager a guess, but most of those animals come from unscrupulous breeders, puppy mills, and it's horrible. And really, by buying a pet at a pet store, you're just contributing to that problem.
Do you get a lot of gift animals into your shelter after a holiday?
Usually, and again, I don't know all the statistics on that. It's not my area of expertise, but I do know that usually in the spring is when we start getting them. Once people realize the impact that this animal has on their life, you know, because right away you might try to stick it out. You might decide to give it a go, especially if it was a surprise gift or something.
Oh, gosh, never surprises.
Exactly. And then a couple months down the line when you realize that you just, A, can't afford it, B, don't have time, or C, maybe it's just not the pet for you, as I was saying about personalities. So that's when we start to see them, is likely in the early spring.
I see.
After a few months.
Now, we're running short on time. Would you give us your website? I'm sure there's lots of information on that, and maybe even a telephone number if it would be useful.
Absolutely. Well, our website for just the basic SPCA is www.sppca.org. www.spca.bc.ca. And if you'd like to give a positive gift this Christmas, our website is www.positivegifts, with an S at the end of gifts, and again, the paw part is P-A-W, and that's .ca. So www.positivegifts.ca, and you can learn about all the gifts that we have to offer.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us today, Lise.
Thank you for having me. That's wonderful.
A lot of valuable, timely information.
Good. I hope it helps. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye-bye. Now, you have been listening to an interview with Lise Brown, who is the fundraising coordinator for the British Columbia SPCA. And you are listening to CFRO 102.7 on your FM dial, and this is Animal Voices. Now, we have our second guest on the line, so I'm going to turn the mic over to Carl.
Yes, thank you, Marge. And what a wonderful recommendation there about giving pets as gifts over Christmas. And she says it very categorically, don't, or really seriously consider what is best for the animal. Well, we have a very exciting author of Liz Mitten Ryan. She is a painter and author of the book called One with the Herd, A Spiritual Journey. She lives somewhere in between Merritt and Kamloops on 320 acres. And she's with us today. Welcome to Animal Voices, Liz Mitten Ryan.
Hi, Carl. Good to be here.
Good, thank you. And you know, your wonderful book, there's paintings and pictures, and it's so good. But what was most revealing was your spiritual journey, because you became one with the herd. Maybe you can explain exactly what you did.
Well, I had a rare opportunity when we found our property up here, this 320-acre ranch. We sold our house a little more quickly than we thought, and I wound up moving onto the land with my herd of horses, my dogs, and my cats, and I got to spend 3 months in a wall tent. So basically, I spent most of my day just running with the herd.
And this turned into an understanding of the animals, the horses, and that gave rise to your book, One with the Herd, A Spiritual Journey. So maybe you can give us some examples of, you know, how it affected you. What kind of spirituality do these horses have?
Well, I have come to understand, and this has now been 8 years that I've been living beside and above my herd, because we built a barn and suite right next door, that there is only one consciousness, and which means that animals are, you know, on the same level as humans. They connect to what they call God is the all, and they connect on that higher level, but probably far more often than humans do, because they don't have that ego that keeps them tied to this physical body. So all of nature and all of animals are connecting with this higher understanding.
Now, to reveal all this to you, you became like a horse, living with them, moving with them. And how did they accept you, or how did it influence you?
Well, you know, until this time, I always had my horse in a barn. I would go and visit them, and I might be there for an hour or two and go for a ride, brush them, feed them, and then go home. But actually being in the presence of nature and animals full time, it just gave me entirely new insights. I found that I would, you know, very easily could read their body language and what they were saying to each other. And then it got beyond the body language, so that I would be just sitting there quietly in their presence, and a thought would pop into my head, and I'd be thinking, this isn't my thought. Where did this thought come from? And very quickly I realized that they were connecting me to this higher level of consciousness. And not only were they connecting me there, they were there all the time. They quite fluidly move between, you know, their earthly bodies and connect to all the rest of existence. So I was getting huge, huge ideas. We're not talking about them saying, well, I'd like some more apples or carrots. They were telling me how they would make a difference in the world and how humanity could learn from the animals.
So what you've learned from the animals, you've expressed in your wonderful book, One with the Herd. But maybe give us something that that they communicated with you, like an example.
Well, I suppose my first communication came in when I was probably, oh, two-thirds of the way through One with the Herd, which was the first book. I started to write that book. It was channeled information. Didn't really know why I was writing it. I'm thinking, gee, I'm writing this horse book, but I'm an artist. Why am I doing this? So two-thirds of the way through, or I decided I would ask them, and I said, you know, I really have a feeling this is your book, not mine. What are you writing this book about? And, you know, so they started to give me some really amazing information at that point. And they wrote the dedication and the prologue and the epilogue and pages of quotes that I've put in the book. But it, when that happened, I was sitting there at the table across from my husband, and I'm saying, Kevin, guess what I just got from the horses? It was a huge revelation to me because it was the first time I was actually given words, pictures, a huge big idea. So Kevin's looking at me thinking, my wife's talking to horses now. So I said to him, why don't we ask them some questions? Because Mr. Disbeliever there reading his Guardian Weekly and in touch with the world and humanity. So his first question to the horses was, how would you improve upon man's inept stewardship of the earth?
Wow.
And he thought he would really stump them with that.
Oh, yes.
Well, I sat down, and the way I channel it is I just sit at my kitchen table, and I see all their faces, and I can pull every herd member there, and I give them the question and connect with them. Well, Ellie, my lead mare, came forward, because often, you know, a different horse will answer a different question. So she came forward, and she said, I have the solution for you. And she wrote five pages of the most amazing information that I was just completely blown away. I'm just like, whoa, well, maybe if we listened to the animals, the world wouldn't be such a mess.
Right.
So that was the start of book two. And then I basically asked the horses a whole lot of questions. And one of my babies, my firstborn baby, who is also the lead mare's daughter, and she's very, very outspoken. She's very metaphorical. She's a beautiful writer. And it's funny to hear me talk like that about animals, but each animal has their own unique personality, just like humans. And some of them are just beautiful writers and, you know, really understand life and have, you know, a mission. Prima's mission is to illuminate mankind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she doesn't have any small mission here. It's like, no, she's going to change the world. So anyway, the horses all began to come forward and tell me their ideas. And Prima came forward and said, I have a whole book to write, and I'd really like you to help me with it. And she just gave me the table of contents, and I sat there and I wrote it chapter by chapter. And then every time that I'd be sitting down trying to accomplish something else, trying to do a painting, she would just come to me, and I'd see her face in my between my eyes. And I went, all right, I agreed to do this. So I'd put my paintbrush down, go downstairs, grab my pen, and scribble, you know, another dozen pages, which were all her inspiration. So, you know, it's not just that I'm translating things that I've asked them. This is their inspiration of how they would, you know, what they would like to tell mankind.
So the communication doesn't always only involve asking them questions. Maybe when they give you some of their worldly wisdom, would you maybe relate some of your worldly wisdom, because your book clearly shows some real magic.
Well, you know what? I think any of the magic and any of the wisdom that are in those books came from the horses. Seriously. I just think the more I read and the more I communicate with them, the more I realize that humans are so far off base now, because they're just ego-directed, and their whole reality revolves around this particular lifetime on this physical plane that has all these parameters which human mass consciousness have put into place.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of floated off onto our own little island, whereas the animals and the rest of nature continue to commune with each other and with the all, this
right.
higher wisdom. Whereas we've just like gone off and we're like so far left afield.
Now have I got it right? Because you spoke about they have no ego, and it's the ego that has made humankind lose its connection with Mother Earth. Would you say that's correct?
Yes, because we identify, say, our ego as a point on a line in time, in space, and in you know our physical plane existence. We have one point on a line, which is our ego. So everything for us is to the left of that, to the right of it. It's either, you know, above it or below it, or it's too hot or it's too cold, or all our polarities are based on that identification with that one point. Whereas animals simply drift, you know, through time, through dimension. They very easily, you know, almost like a human in a meditative state, they leave their body and they flow and they become one with the day, one with the scene, one with that higher consciousness, and one with all the other animals and all the rest of nature, and with us as well, which is how they can help us, because they interconnect to all of life and to humans. So when we connect with an animal, we're locking into that huge, big, you know, amazing amount of information and wisdom.
Now, within your 13 horses that you have there, they also have their hierarchy with, as you mentioned, their different personalities. And you say there's Ellie was maybe the leader? And was Ellie the baby? I'm not quite
no,
sure.
No, Ellie is my, her name is Limited Edition. She was my first mare. And because I was an artist, I named all my horses Edition Warmbloods. So it's Premier Edition and Divine Edition and Miraculous Edition. So Ellie is Limited Edition. She was my first, and she is the leader of the herd, undisputed. But she is this huge, wise being. She's a very benevolent leader, so that she doesn't ever have to resort to force. She'll just simply put her focus on another horse, and they catch it, and they move, or they do whatever it is she's directed them to do. And that is a huge lesson, too, that horses have to teach us, is focus. You know, we can do anything with clear focus.
Right. Now, we do many things to horses without their consent. And maybe with your horses living the free range and you living with them, and they're coming to your door willingly with their when they wish, maybe... We'll touch about this maybe negative, unrealistic world of what horses do in the city. They're race horses. They are pets. All kinds of things. They're mm-hmm. bred. What would you say your horses would say to them, their fellow companions who live in the city?
Well, you know, it's not a natural situation for horses. Any of the things we really ask them to do, because most of what humans ask horses to do is a demand and then a punishment. You know, I demand that you do this and move this way or jump this jump, and if not, I will punish you. So what I decided to do with my horses is based on friendship and communication. So because I can no longer look at them as lesser beings, they've given me so much information and understanding that I'm talking to a fellow being. I go into my herd and I ask them. I don't ever demand anything. I'll say, who would like to play? And because I make it so rewarding for them and so much fun, I'm their friend. They come out the minute I walk out to the barn, all their heads are up. It's Mom. Oh, my God, what wonderful thing is she going to do for me today? Because I go in there laden with treats and scratches. And you know, we play together, and they love it. And now I get to the point where I run out there and I have to sneak. And I'll have to come up to one of them and just whisper or just catch their eye and say, shh, Epona, come on, let's sneak out before the other horses see, because otherwise I'll have half a dozen of them all trying to crowd out the gate to jump on the tires and play in the playground.
I have a question. I know that we often refer to training a horse as breaking a horse. Mm-hmm. Now, others call it gentling the horse. Could you comment on that, and the different attitude towards the horses, with the terminology suggests anyway?
Well, breaking is definitely the cowboy term, because they don't have any time or patience, and they have a job to get done. So they have to grab that horse, and that horse has never been touched before, never had any human contact, and yet whatever it takes, they're going to get that saddle on that horse, and they're going to be riding after cows in the shortest amount of time it can possibly take. And that quite often does break their spirit. Because can you imagine, you're a young horse, and you've never really interacted with these humans, and all of a sudden they put this cage over your head, and they drag you away from your mother, and they put all these scary things on you, and they hop on your back, and they spur you, and they, I mean, it's just like a mountain lion jumping on their back trying to eat them.
Terrible experience,
I'm sure. It's a horrible, unthinkable thing to do to anybody. And it's all because it's expedient for humans. And, you know, that's why do we do any of the horrible things we do to animals? Why do we keep laboratory animals and experiment on them, you know? Just we're using animals, and it's unthinkable.
I totally agree with you, Liz. I'm just really inspired listening to you, and it just makes me think that, you know, you've spent such amazing quality time with these animals, and I'm a big proponent of education and getting people in contact with animals, and I was just wondering, what would you say, I guess what would you say would be the number one most important thing to teach people about animals so that they come to maybe not the deep realizations you have, but to a greater compassion? Like, is it just spending time with them and really being with animals like horses, or?
It's all animals. You know, I fully believe that animals are spiritual equals, that there is only one consciousness, that there is only one life force. And when you're touching that consciousness of that life force, it's just simply manifesting in a different shape or size or ability in whatever form that life is. So how could we treat animals any differently than we would treat our family members? You know, let alone, I mean, what humans do to other humans is unthinkable. But what humans are doing to animals now is, you know, as unthinkable as what we did to the American blacks or the Jews or any of our species that we experimented on, that we used and abused.
I know. I like to think that one day we'll look back on this era and just be shocked at how we treated animals, as we're shocked about how we treated slaves hundreds of years ago.
Exactly. And that's exactly what the horses are giving me now. They tell me, and this is very strong, that in this decade, animals will have rights, animals will be considered spiritual equals, and we will look back on it and think, oh, my God, how unconscious to lock them in a cage and torture them. It's just unthinkable. They have the same emotions we do. They love their families like we do.
Yes, and we're listening to Animal Voices and the wonderful animal stories coming from Liz Mitten-Ryan, author of One with the Herd. And you have a web page which is called onewiththeherd.com, is it?
Yes.
Onewiththeherd.com, wonderful Christmas gift. It'll elevate your spirituality to maybe understand our kindred species a little bit better. But, you know, Liz Mitten-Ryan, yesterday I was down in Southlands. It was a rainy and wet day in Vancouver, and may I add, somewhat dark at noon. And we were down there, and there were some horses, one horse standing in a little paddock, which was covered with wood chips, and looking somewhat sad because it had a sort of a cover on its back. And I rolled down the window, and I started speaking to the horse. I thought, he says, "Hello, horse, and you know, how are you doing?" And I sort of felt that, well, you know, she winked at me with her big eyes, and she wasn't too excited about where she was. So, but you said something really interesting this morning, and it was that these horses, they adapt very well to cold weather. They can be out there. You live in Okanagan, minus 20 degrees, but horses don't like rain.
No, that's what they tell me. They're like, well, do we like rain? Who likes going out there and sitting?
They sound like smart horses.
You know, they're no different than we are.
Yeah.
If they're so well adapted to, you know, deal with the cold, they have a big thick coat, and they're totally comfortable out there. They're rolling in the snow and playing. But one day of rain, they're all hiding in the barn.
Now, it seemed that these horses didn't have an option to go undercover. They were standing in the heavy rain. And they were sniveling around in the wood chips to see if there was anything to eat. I mean, these they need mental stimulation too, don't they?
It's very sad. It's very sad. Can you imagine being kept? Like, it's like being a prisoner in solitary. And a lot of horses are worse off than that. They're in a stall. And they get brought out to be ridden, and then they get stuck back in this 12 by 12 stall. It's barely big enough to allow them to lie down.
Now,
and that's their life.
Now, one of my experiences with horses is that I sense this incredible sensitivity with their mouths. They will choose a plant, like they'll absolutely avoid certain plants and eat some, and also they will not ingest anything. They're very particular. They must have great sensitivity about their mouths. I also discovered that some horses don't like carrots, or was it that they didn't like me?
No, you know what it is that so few horses actually get treats, because people are told, oh, you don't want to hand feed your horse, it'll encourage it to bite, or all these other myths, you know, of what horses can do to us that could be fearful and scary. It's not true at all. Most of my horses that I did get as adults from somewhere else didn't know what a carrot was, didn't know what an apple was. And horses won't eat anything unless their body has the ability to digest it. So they'll nibble it a little bit the first time, and they'll just get a little bit in their body. And then by the next time, they'll nibble a little bit more. So you have to actually teach horses to like carrots.
Now, Liz Mitten, maybe you can just, in closing here, if you could just say something about your book. And you've been on a book tour, and you were at, I met you in West Vancouver. And you were on a book tour, and you're going to Seattle today. So maybe just say something about your book, and we'll say onewiththeherd.com is where people can order it. And maybe say something about your book.
Well, they can also go to the site and see there's a DVD that I've made with me playing with the horses, and that's just on the book page. If you just do One with the Herd, you'll go directly to books, and you can look at the DVD. It's just 7.5 minutes, but it'll give you an idea of how I break a horse, which I go out there and no tack at all, sit on my baby. They turn around, look at me, and go, oh, isn't this great? Mom's on my back. So, I mean, that'll give you a little more understanding. And there's also some excerpts from book two, which is The Truth According to Horses, which is the one my horses wrote entirely. So you can go to the book section and go and read a little bit of what the horses have actually have to say as well.
Now, Liz, do you if people want to come visit your very special horses or see you playing with them, is that possible? Are you, I don't know, open to the public?
Well, public meaning how many?
I guess my mom, who loves horses, would do a day trip out to see
definitely.
You.
I've had several amazing people email me, and this summer I had a Reiki master who emailed me out of the blue and said, I have to come and meet your horses.
Uh-huh.
And she came and stayed for 3 weeks, and that was absolutely amazing.
Well, we'll just have to write you a special email.
So exactly. I mean, you know, if somebody really, really wants to, and the place we have a guest house is open, of course, that's what this is about, is, you know, letting people understand horses.
Fabulous.
Thank you, Liz Mitten-Ryan, for educating us about horses and for taking time on your busy schedule to be on Animal Voices on Co-op Radio. And many of our programs are listed on our webpage, animalvoices.org. Thank you, Liz.
Thanks so much, Carl.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Yes, wonderful interview. This is CFRO 102.7 FM, fondly referred to as Co-op Radio, and it is your independent, non-sponsored local radio. Now we're going to turn over to Kelly Harris, and she's going to tell us about puppy mills.
Thank you, Marge. Yes, I was talking to Marge, and when you told me who your interviewer was, I thought, well, I'll look into puppy mills, which has also been an area of interest for me, because I adopted a dog who came from a puppy mill. She, as I said to our interviewee, she was 4. She'd been a breeding dog at a puppy mill and came to me with a host of health problems. She's literally cost me thousands of dollars, but she's worth every penny. So I've done some research on puppy mills, and there's 2 websites that I'll mention off the top where I got most of my information. One called nopuppymillscanada.ca. That's nopuppymillscanada.ca. And incidentally, you can click on what is a mill on the left, and there's a little video. And it's very helpful to actually get some visual information on what a puppy mill is. And the second website I looked at was called stoppuppymills.org, stoppuppymills.org. And that one is put together by the Humane Society of the United States, but a lot of the information, most of the information is just as applicable here to Canada. And at the stoppuppymills.org, they had a big banner that said for Christmas, puppies are poopy presents, which I quite liked. Puppies are poopy presents. It's not a great present to give. So first of all, I'll just throw some information your way, and then maybe Marge and Carl, you can comment. Puppy mills are the greatest cause of pet overpopulation and companion animal euthanasia, companion animal being another word for pet. And according to the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, the definition of a puppy mill describes a breeding operation in which dogs are repeatedly bred for financial gain and are kept in substandard conditions. Puppy mill dogs are often confined to small cages for their entire lives and commonly suffer from various infections and parasites. A puppy mill cannot meet the needs of a dog and is a form of cruelty. Now, puppy mills are also known as commercial breeding facilities, or commonly also called backyard breeder. And they often have names like Cozy Kennel and Smith Family Farms, and, you know, just cute little nice sounding names. But when you see the images of how these dogs are raised, they completely do not match the names. The problem with puppy mills, too, is that the dogs that are bred, you know, there's no scientific approach to the breeding, so they'll just put together two dogs and mate them for purely financial gain. And chronic health and behavioral problems in the puppies are, you know, very, very common, and causes a lot of grief for people who adopt them. Many of these illnesses and you know, genetic defects don't show up till later on in life. Now, puppy mills sell primarily to retail pet stores, as our interviewee said today, and often they sell also directly to individual consumers via newspaper ads, but most of the time puppy mills sell to what are called brokers, and brokers will travel around the country and hit various puppy mills, adopting, you know, buying dogs as young as, you know, 5 or 6 weeks, and dogs technically, puppies should stay with their moms until they're about 12 weeks to be properly socialized and raised. They're often taken a lot earlier than that by the brokers because they have long distances to travel to get their puppies to pet stores across the country. And the dogs and the puppies are usually in squalid living conditions and are off limits to the public. Most public, we don't have access to puppy mills because the brokers take them and then they go to the pet stores. And I'll just talk briefly about some of the videos that I saw. The number one, you know, you can look at these videos. They're not so disturbingly graphic as I have seen some animal cruelty videos can be. But the number one thing that I noticed is all the barking. These dogs are just nonstop barking. So imagine a tiny cage with like 4 or 5 dogs in it, nonstop barking. These dogs are just going crazy. They are often standing. If they're in cages, they're standing right on the wire cages. And you see, if for smaller dogs, especially like Pomeranians or Yorkshire Terriers, their paws are so small that they're slipping through the grates and often getting cut, and they'll have bleeding paws even as they're running around in circles frantically. They go a little bit stir crazy in the cages. Filthy conditions. Someone taking a video lifted up a Pomeranian who had feces all over his coat. The water is squalid and stagnant, and very little food. So it's quite shocking to see when you picture the kind of cute, fluffy, clean puppies that you see in the puppy stores. It's hard to believe that they come from those puppy mills. So I definitely encourage people to go have a look at those. And the best way to stop puppy mills, you know, as we heard in our interview earlier today, is to get your pet from an animal shelter or a pet rescue group, or from a well-screened, responsible breeder who's going to have a very personal interest in sending their puppies to a good home. And no breeder would ever sell their dog through a pet store. That's what these websites said, and our guest said today as well. So mainly, as with many, many issues with animal rights, the main thing is we have to stop the flow of consumer dollars to these puppy mills and to the brokers. So, yeah.
Well, sorry, Carl, go ahead.
Well, within the next few weeks, we'll probably have somebody on our show here, and she has a rescue place in Surrey where she keeps pigs, and many people think that potbelly pigs make really good pets, but they also end up at the place where somebody else has to take care of them. Mm-hmm. And this wonderful lady, she has so many, and so many come to her door. They're abandoned in front of her gate, and it's a disaster. Pigs. I mean, talking about dogs and puppy mills, but mm-hmm. the same applies to pigs. And I was recently at one of these gigantic box stores deal with pet supplies, and they had reptiles there. Well, we know that the Vancouver Reptile Refuge, our good friend there who's been on our show many times, and they're really struggling financially because the people just abandon their pets.
Reptiles have a very long life expectancy too, don't they, often?
For sure. And you know what? They're so impersonal, mm-hmm. and they... people don't relate to them.
Yeah.
I was telling somebody else, I knew somebody who had a snake, and he sort of seemed to enjoy giving these live crickets and live mice to the snake. And what a perverseness here to enjoy watching that. They're not indigenous to our country here. They don't belong underneath a heat lamp. They get blinded. And please... when you see these animals in the stores, let them know that you don't favor that this store should be promoting something which is so unjust towards these animals.
Yeah. I've seen them in schools, too,
yeah.
lizards and reptiles. So it's mm-hmm. bred into the bone, isn't it?
Yeah.
This attitude.
Yeah. And I think you're right, Carl. It's across the board. I mean, everything that I'm saying here about puppy mills can apply to cats as well, who are mass bred, sold in pet stores. You know, guinea pigs, rabbits, anything. Basically, anytime you adopt an animal, you want to do it from, you know, either the SPCA or a reputable rescue agency, because there's so much education needs to go along before deciding to adopt the pet and then once you have it. I can't believe how much I've learned with this dog and, you know, adopting a very sick dog from a puppy mill. It's been a very sobering experience.
So would you say people should make instead of buying a pet, make a donation to the Vancouver Reptile Refuge? They can look it up in the webpage and you'll be doing something good for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Petcetera is making money hand over fist, doing exactly the opposite, isn't that right?
Yeah.
So it's up against a giant again.
Mm, yeah. Yes, it's a strong lobby, I think.
Commercialism at its best, John.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just want to give you a quote from Christine and Clarence Schramm, who were the founders of the Rainforest Reptile Refuge. Their statement was, "Exotics do not make good pets."
Yeah.
And they were getting the brunt of the fact that people were dumping pets, exotic pets.
Yeah, and if you're interested in exotic pets, make a donation to Save the Rainforest, and let's keep them in their habitat and out of tanks and heat lamps and
now,
children's
Now, a caller called in about an injured crow that he had found, and I think the SPCA said that if the bird can't fly, they'll destroy it if they take it in.
Wildlife Rescue? Yeah, I would say that one. In Burnaby, they would be the place to call.
Okay.
Now, Carl, you have a short item you'd like to...
Well, yes, I hope I have about 3 minutes. And John, do we have about 3 minutes?
Yes, we do.
Thank you, John, for being so generous. Well, my twin brother, Wolfgang, that's his name, he calls me Helmut, by the way. Carl Helmut. Anyway.
What does it mean, Helmut?
Pardon?
What does it mean, Helmut?
It means... courage and energy.
Oh, my.
Wer denkt an seinem Vater's Mut?
Ooh,
is courage.
Do you speak German, Carl?
A little bit.
You can fake it well.
A little bit. Anyway, my twin brother, he is in India, and he's doing some surgery work there in the Himalaya hills there in India. And when he left... he's a volunteer there, by the way. He's retired, like me. And so I said to him, when you go to India, kiss a cow for me. Now, I had an experience when I was in India, and it was in Varanasi, which is on the Ganges. And I knew from my Lonely Planet book that what you do in the mornings is you go down to the Ghats early before sunrise and watch the sunrise over the river, and everybody goes down there singing and chanting, and it was my first day in Varanasi, and it was really quite magical. I was walking, I didn't have to know where the ghats were. Everybody was walking down there. But while I was walking down there, suddenly a cow was walking in front of me, and suddenly it lifted its tail, and you know, it's not like a shower, it's like a river, a stream, you know, like, oh wow, you know, these cows, they drink a lot of water. And so I stepped aside, but while I stepped aside, somebody wiser than me jumped from behind in front of me, grabbed hold of the cow's tail, because the tail was up, and cupped his hand underneath the and get some of that valuable liquid, because cow's urine is supposed to be antiseptic, raised his head and dropped the urine into his mouth. And that was the start of a wonderful day of exploration. So I wrote to my twin brother, and I wrote a little letter that that I was feeling and I had a longing for disorganized organization, which is resembles much of what I saw in India. But that was 1981, and I said this disorganized organization is some sort of looseness that is liberating, and maybe if I had to visit downtown Dehradun, it would make me feel more appreciative of this too comfortable deep cove living. But anyway, what I do have is a symbolism of the cow, which a teacher wrote, and he said the cow reminds us of the important role the cow, symbolic of the mother, plays in our lives. It's an opportunity for us to show our appreciation and reverence for her. Whilst possessing a beautiful spiritual symbolism and deep universal significance, cow worshipping might seem like a strange notion for those not raised in the Indian culture. But as with most spiritual things, one must sincerely attempt to peel some of the protective skin if one wants to get the sweet fruit inside. And I believe we're running out of time.
Yes, we are right out of time. Thank you for that, Carl. And I just want to remind you, you are listening to Co-op Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM. And this is Animal Voices. We invite you to tune in again next Friday at 12 noon. We'll be back.
Pussycats run up there, down the hall and up the stairs. Pussycats run, pussycats hide, pussycats all want to play outside. The pussycats are in the yard. You never see a pussycat working hard. Pussycats sleep all day. Nighttime comes, it's time to play. Pussy's so cute when they're really small. Then they get real big and they act too tall. Pussycat, you don't care. Pussycat, sleep in your favorite chair. Pussycat always is looking around. Eyes roll up, eyes roll down. Pussycat whiskers, pussycat hair. Pussycat looks, pussycat stare. What does pussycat have to do but lie on his back and say, who are you? Pussycat people, they don't mind. The pussycat live on pussycat